Good evening, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion. It's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. The views of our guests, the views of our callers. Now, we welcome your calls from out across America, indeed all across the world at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we're hoping very soon to have with us on the line our good friend Ron Brown, who supports our program. And certainly, I think he always has something interesting to say about what's happening on the financial markets. But I just wanted to comment. As we read the paper today, we find out that Ralph Nader now is going to be on 18 ballots across the country. In other words, his name will appear on the ballot in 17 states across the United States. And I'd say that's really a rather remarkable thing. Now, of course, Michael Perutka's name is going to be on probably 42 ballots, and I suspect the Libertarians will be on an equal number. But isn't it amazing that the controlled media in America never mentions the candidacy of constitutionalist, conservative, Christian candidate Michael Perutka, or certainly the Libertarian candidate? Why do they never mention their names? Well, very, very simply, let's put things into an understandable sequence. Basically, the establishment, the people who control all of our media, they want to reelect George Bush. So they keep talking about Ralph Nader to draw people's attention to him, and the people who don't want the war, well, who are you going to vote for? Well, you can't vote for either Bush or Kerry, because they're both going to support the war. So you'll take a vote for Ralph Nader, and he'll, of course, take votes away from Kerry, and that will mean that Bush will win. If the establishment wanted Kerry to win, why, they would be talking about the conservative candidates, those who want to cut back on big government, which most people do, want to cut taxes and have a balanced budget, which most people do, those to talk about traditional values, because, no matter how you feel, the majority of the people in this country still are good moral people who disapprove of so much of what's going on. So if the establishment that controls the media really wanted to have Kerry elected, why, they would, of course, talk about these candidates who would push votes, take votes away from George Bush, but they never mentioned them. When was the last time you saw an article in your newspaper about the candidacy of Michael Perutka, who's already on over 40 state ballots and probably will be on at least 41, maybe more than that, 41, 42 state ballots? And you'll never see him mentioned. Most people don't even know he's running. And, of course, if nobody knows you're running, how do you get any exposure? And if you don't get any exposure, how can you get any votes? And that's how they do it, ladies and gentlemen. Because they control the media, they're able to control our perception and what the American people think. So with that as a background, but I thought it was interesting that Ralph Nader is now actually up to 17 states that he will be on the ballot on. Isn't that wonderful? What a real challenge to, I mean, 17 states, that's just nothing at all. In fact, you really would have to be on even more than 42 states to win the election, although I know that Michael Perutka will be on in California. I suspect that the Libertarian candidate will be on in California as well, because both of these candidates have good constituents and followings across the country. Well, that is the background. Let's go to our special guest this evening, Ron Brown. Hi, Ron. How are you doing? Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Can you hear me?
I certainly can. Well, I had to push the button. As soon as I pushed the button, I could hear you fine. All right. You hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment. And, of course, we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening with the markets, what's happening internationally, of course, how economics are going to impact on your life in the months and years that lie ahead. Guest. This is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Michael. Find me as Ron Brown, and we're going to be talking really about the economics, what's going on behind the scenes. And what most Americans don't understand is that we have a fiat money system here in the United States. What is a fiat money system? It's a system where there's nothing behind your money. And, of course, it's been tried many times down through the centuries. Starting, we know that in ancient Greece, they devalued the value of the currency, they expanded the money supply, they devalued the currency, and it created tremendous prosperity for a time. And then, of course, they had to print more, or actually they were coining base coins made out of base metals and expanding the money supply. And they had to keep doing that until eventually the whole system collapsed. And Sophocles wrote at that time, money. There's nothing in the world so demoralizing as money, because, of course, when you can get money and wealth and you don't have to work for it, it is a demoralizing thing. Aristotle, looking back on what had happened to Greece, said, and talking about a fiat money system, there's nothing inherently wrong in effect with fiat money, provided we get perfect authority and godlike intelligence for kings. Well, I wonder how many people believe we have perfect authority and godlike intelligence running our country today. And if we don't have that, this thing's going eventually to collapse. I'm firmly convinced that our leaders are frightened to death at that prospect. Ron, what's your take on what's happening? How long can we keep this fiat money system going? Or will they be able to take us into a cashless society and just control everything and control everyone by doing that?
First off, I would say that the system we have is even worse than fiat. Fiat money is where your government just prints money at will and making it worthless. The system we're on is central banks. Well, central banks loan, they print the money and loan it into circulation. So not only do you have fiat money in the circulation, you have to pay interest on it, which burdens the society. And that's, of course, our problem today. After 90 years of this system, our nation is in debt beyond any hope of ever paying it back. And so it's become a Ponzi scheme, because you have to keep the system growing, or the whole debt system collapses, and that's the struggle that's going on right now.
And, of course, they just keep printing more and more money. I understand they're increasing the money supply, what, 8, 9%, something like that a year?
Probably that, or probably even more. There's probably a lot going on behind the scenes using something called a coupon pass, which allows the central bank to basically create money and not show it on the books to bail out some institution or... Maybe today the problem is they have to keep the bond market strong, and with the dollar collapsing around the world, you would expect interest rates
Hold that thought right there for just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown, and we're talking about what's going on and how the banks create money out of nothing. Now, it is the most amazing thing if you read Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. On page 325, he will tell you that the head of the Midland Bank told his stockholders, and this was probably 50, 75 years or so, maybe even 100 years ago. He said, you know, there's something that one of the most carefully kept secrets, and most people would not want to know this, and certainly the leaders don't want people to understand this, but banks create money out of nothing. Well, so do central banks. That's what they do. They not only create money out of nothing, but then they have the loan institutions that loan money on houses, and they create money out of nothing as well. So not only the central banks create money, but Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are able to create money out of nothing through their lending process, because everything's really built upon debt, isn't it?
That's right, and that's the problem. After 90 years of this system, this debt structure has just gotten so unwieldy that the laws of economics are trying to collapse it, and yet the people in power obviously are trying to keep that system going. So it's the tiger's chasing his tail. They have to keep printing money to keep it from collapsing, but the more they print, the more they devalue the currency, and it's just on and on and on. It's really starting to spin out of control now.
Well, of course, we're told that there's nothing to worry about. It looks like the economy's going to pick up. Big headlines in the paper today in the Wall Street Journal. You know, CEOs are optimistic about the future. Well, it turns out what the article says is about 41-42% of CEOs are going to plan to expend more money, but 49% don't plan to. And I think there was another 12% said that they were pessimistic. But I'll tell you what, certainly it sounds like an awful lot of CEOs are not going to expand. The majority are either not going to expand or going to continue contracting, because they're concerned about what's going on, but they're trying to give us a perception through the headlines, through the articles in the Wall Street Journal, that everything is hunky-dory, everything's going to be fine. But, you know, we're hearing now that the General Motors and Ford Motor Company have said they're going to cut back 5% on automobile production here this next quarter. And of course, that's going to have an impact on the economy and on the jobs there in the Middle West. And we certainly know that the textile industry is just hanging on by its fingernails here in the United States. And when the restrictions change next year, if we don't impose some sort of a tariff or control, why, China will certainly flood the entire country, really the entire world, with textiles, and simply wipe out the textile industry, not only in the United States, but in all the other countries of the world.
Yeah, it's, how do you explain it? The whole system is trying to unravel. Here's where the illusion or the delusion comes in. If you create enough money, you can create the illusion of wealth. If we went out and gave everyone $20,000, then they could go out and buy things, and you would have the economy growing because of all this consumption. But you can't just print wealth. So what we're doing is we're inflating the system. I really believe we're heading towards hyperinflation, because they're just having to print money faster and faster and faster. And as they do that, the system just starts to spin out of control.
Well, we're seeing here, you know, in the West Coast and other parts of the country, where property values, home prices of homes, you know, have gone up maybe 30% in the last 2 years. I mean, how long can you keep expanding or increasing the price of homes? First of all, you get to the point where, unless you're a millionaire, you can't buy one. If young people buy these homes, why, the interest payments or the monthly payments will eventually destroy them as the interest rates rise. So you're creating a really sort of an impossible situation, especially for younger people who do not already own a home.
Yeah, let me share just one story. I have a client out in, I think he's in the San Diego, between San Diego and L.A. area, and he has a house that he's had for 25, 30 years, I suppose, and it's like 2,000 square foot, and the market's been so hot out there 4, 5, 6 months ago, the wholesalers or the real estate agents for big money were coming into his area just trying to buy the houses up for resale, and they were offering him $850,000 for this house, and he didn't make the decision because, for whatever reason, and after about 2 or 3 months, that's when They came out with the hint that they were going to raise interest rates, remember, two, three, four months ago? And when just that hint of interest rates going up, these real estate, these wholesalers that were buying this, up this property for resale just backed off because they didn't want to be buying property that, and the interest rates would go up and they wouldn't be able to sell it. So it, the value of that house has dropped something like $100,000 to $150,000 in just 2 or 3 months because the buyers dried up for it. So you look at what's going out in California, and it's just mind-boggling to me that what starter homes are going for $400,000 or up.
Yeah.
What's going to happen when these young kids, 30 years old, they can go in the hock for a $400,000 home and the bubble pops, and overnight their $400,000 home's worth $250,000 or $200,000? And you're going to see people, I would guess, just walking away from real estate en masse.
Well, this is what happened in actually in Japan a decade ago. And,
that's right.
You know, the property values there, a lot of it fell 70 or 80% in value. And then the banks were holding all this property, all this bad loans. They had this tremendous loans on their books. And, of course, what they had in the security for the loans was worth nowhere near that. And so the banks in Japan have never really completely recovered from what happened a decade or so ago. Could the same thing happen here? I don't know why it couldn't. We're doing exactly the same thing. We've inflated our economy beyond any relationship to true value.
Well, that's right. And the problem with the bubble is you never know when it's going to end. I remember the dot-com bubble back in the 90s, you know, the stock market had gone from under 1,000 on the Dow, hit, what, 3,200 by 1987, had a little correction, and it started up, and everyone was saying in, by, let's say, 1988, 1989, that the market was way overvalued at 3,000, and yet where did it go? It went to 12,000. So the problem with the bubble is you never know when to get off, and it's so much... It just sucks you in because you're making so much money. It's just amazing while it's going up, and yet, if you stay a moment too late, you get trapped. And of course, the people in the dot-coms lost 60, 70, 80% of their money in just a matter of weeks when this thing finally popped.
Well, I knew when it had reached the top because everybody I knew who was very bearish had suddenly turned very bullish. And that old adage, when the last bear becomes a bull, then you are at the top of the market.
That's right.
And, of course, basically, these markets go always far higher than you anticipate. And when they fall far lower than you anticipate. This is the amazing thing about how these systems work. And we've seen this story of the tulip mania in Holland, a couple hundred years ago, when, you know, tulip bulbs were going for hundreds of dollars each. Why were they valued? Were they worth that much? Of course not, but people would pay that much for them. And then there was the Florida explosion, maybe 50, 70 years ago. And these same things have happened time and again through history. Some fellow was going to corner the world market on matches, and people bought his stock. They did fantastically well, but there was no value to it. It was all on expectation. And that's exactly what happened to so many of the dot-com stocks. They had no value at all, but they were going up day after day, and finally people started buying them, and they started making money, and then they started investing more money, and then other people went into this. And it's exactly what happened in the 1920s here in the United States in our stock market. It's exactly what happened with the dot-com bubble here in the United States. It's all psychological. It's herd mentality. But, of course, eventually you have to get back to some sort of relationship between the value and the price.
Well, that's right. And, you know, there's been so many smaller examples of that in the U.S., the ostrich eggs, the llamas, all the different things that become the phase, the fad, and people hop on it and jump in and pay $50,000 or whatever for these animals, and then when the bubble busts, they become worthless.
Who wants a llama in their backyard? but of course, you know, if you got it on the bottom floor, well, you did very, very well.
Right.
Well, Ron, you know, as we look and see what's happening to gold and silver, they seem to have been just sort of stabilized a little bit. They're creeping back up again after they were knocked down here, what, about 3 months or so ago?
Well, it's so important to try to put it into perspective and understand up front that gold and silver is the archenemy of the international bankers, of the central bankers. They hate it with a passion because it exposes the fraud of their paper money system. So anyone that gets into gold and silver has to understand up front that the powers, you're trying to swim upstream. You're going against the establishment, and they will do everything in their power to suppress the price of gold and silver and to discourage people from getting into it. If you really just look past the surface, in fact, you don't really have to look past the surface, it's just the aggregates of the money in circulation. You know, you've talked many times about our national debt being up around $50 trillion. Well, if you go worldwide, I think you could easily come up, let's say, let's be conservative and say there's $100 trillion of paper debt in circulation. And we haven't even mentioned derivatives, which is up in the trillions by itself. And it's just 1%, or even just 0.1% of the money that's in paper lost confidence and tried to invest in gold and silver as a refuge from the devaluing paper currency system, which is coming. The flight out of paper is just starting to accelerate over the last 2 years. But just 0.1%, using $100 trillion as your base, would be, what, $100 billion?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's only $5 to $10 billion worth of silver in the world. So you can see why they're scared to death of silver starting any momentum to the upside, because what happened if that 0.1% went to 1% because of the momentum? See, it would just overwhelm the system overnight.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a few minutes, and we're going to welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295. I'd like to know what you think about what's going on. I'll tell you what I think. I think that Lord Rothschilds and the Rothschild family have maintained the price of gold for 200 years, and they've suddenly pulled out. The same thing is true with AIG, maintaining the price of silver. They pulled out. What do they know that you don't know? Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Ron Brown. We're sort of talking about what's happening financially in the world today. And I think it's important that people analyze what has happened. What we have is a series of central banks that control the economy of the entire world. And these central banks throughout the world all have a fiat money system. Well, with a few exceptions. And actually, Switzerland still has a gold-backed currency. The euro is an entirely new currency, which will be competing with the dollar, and it has a 15% gold backing. And so, actually, several of the countries in Europe have gold backing for their currencies, too, even higher than the 15%, which the euro has. And then, of course, we know that the Muslims are talking about going to a gold dinar, to a gold-backed currency. Why? Well, one reason would be, of course, I think, to hurt the United States. The second thing is, why should they sell something that they own, that is oil, for paper currency that is redeemable and nothing but paper currency? So they're giving something of intrinsic value for something that really has no intrinsic value. It has only the perception of intrinsic value. And at one time, of course, money was redeemable in lawful currency or in gold or silver. It is no longer. And the Arabs are smart enough to realize that. And I think that people throughout the world, the American people have been pretty well dumbed down by what's going on, but I think people in China understand that you want something of inherent value. I think that people in India understand that. I think that people in Malaysia, and I think that the people in the Arab countries understand really the fundamentals of economics far better than the average American who's been educated falsely. He's been educated and told things that just aren't true. And he really believes in a monetary system based upon faith and confidence in our politicians. And I don't really think we have people who have the knowledge of that Aristotle described, men, with almost supernatural knowledge and total integrity. So what's happening throughout the rest of the world, Ron?
Well, here's what I think is happening. You know, let's go back to 2001 when that dot-com bubble burst. That started us on to the path of the markets collapsing. The era of the paper investments came to an end at that point, and we were starting down on the financial markets. They're starting to go downward, and the alternative to paper money, which is the gold, is starting into its new bull market. So if you use July of 2001, that's basically when the gold market and the silver market bottomed. Gold bottomed at somewhere around $250 an ounce, and silver was right at $4 an ounce. And so over the next, next 3 years, gold went from 250 and rose as high as $430 back in April. Silver had gone from $4 to $8.30. Both of them looked like they were ready to go to the moon because the momentum in the markets was starting to build. At the same time, if you look back at April, what was happening? The Dow Jones was trying to break below 10,000 again. Oil was breaking above $40 for the first time in a long time. You had interest rates threatening to go up. And so the whole system was in jeopardy. And that's when I think the bankers called out the cavalry, and you could hear them coming in with all bugles blowing, doing everything they can. They sold massive amounts of paper silver to drive the price of silver down and gold, while at the same time propping up the financial markets to buy some time. And so,
hold that thought for just a moment here while our stations join us again. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown. And Ron was telling us about his opinion that certainly the gold and silver markets are being totally manipulated. Of course, I think the stock market is totally manipulated as well. Now, we're not supposed to believe that. It's against the law for you and I to try to manipulate markets. But government does this under the guise of, well, we have to do that. We have to have an orderly market. And the last thing they want coming into the election is the stock market in disarray or falling, because that has a psychological impact on the minds of the American people. And if they see the market going down, they're going to vote for John Kerry. If they see the market stabilized, they're going to vote for George Bush. Look at it however you will. The economy is a very, very important thing to the average individual. Now, I think that we've seen recently something fascinating, and that is the price of oil, well, up to $50 a barrel, and suddenly backing down to $43, maybe soda going up and down, $43, $44, $45 in there. But, of course, as that price of oil was going up, this was really beginning to create some problems as far as the economy was concerned and the cost of trucking and the fuel for our airplanes. And, of course, we use petrochemicals in so many products here, and as the price goes up, it has a very dampening effect on everything else. But to understand what is really happening and why I think this is only a temporary issue, I would just suggest people get a copy of Bob Woodward's book, Borrow One. Don't bother to waste your money buying it, but borrow it if you want to get the information why we can send it to you. But borrow a copy of the Plan of Attack by Bob Woodward, and he will tell you that he was told by the Saudis that they had promised the Bushes that they would keep the price of oil down until the election so that he could get reelected. And this was a deal that was made behind the scenes, so it's all manipulated. After the election, hang on to your hat as far as I'm concerned. But right now, they're doing everything they can to keep the price of oil down to help the Bush reelection campaign. Of course, the Bushes deny what Bob Woodward says or what isn't true, you know. Why, we wouldn't do a thing like that. If you believe that, of course, you believe anything. Let's go to Tony, who's calling. Hi, Tony.
Oh, hi, Dr. Stan.
Have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I've got a question. First of all, I'd like to recommend that one of these days you try and get Ted Butler on.
Ted's a very good person.
Yeah. I've been following the Barrick lawsuit, Blanchard versus Barrick, and that has not gotten thrown out. In fact, it's in discovery, and there was just a new motion by Barrick to dismiss, and everything has been going on Blanchard's side as far as the judge's ruling.
Tony, for our listeners out there who don't know about this lawsuit, the Barrick and J.P. Morgan and a couple of other big banking concerns have been involved in a conspiracy to keep the price of gold down for many years. Blanchard, who is a coin dealer, has brought a lawsuit in federal court for conspiracy, to manipulate the price of gold. And that is the lawsuit then between Blanchard and Barrick. So, Pick, what else did you want to say there?
Well, I just want to know if Ron has kept up on this, because it seems like that judge there in Louisiana he's just put every motion that Barrick has come up with. He's turned them down.
Okay, do you know anything about that lawsuit, Ron?
Well, I know all about it. I haven't followed it directly. for one reason, I'm real pessimistic that they'll ever win the lawsuit. Now, that doesn't mean they shouldn't bring it, for those, the very fact that we're talking about it now is bringing exposure to the manipulation. This really is just kind of a carry forward of the lawsuit that Gatto brought against the same people, two, 3 years ago, and it was eventually dismissed, not because the case didn't have merit, but I think the judge said the people making the lawsuit had no standing in the court, whatever that means.
Well, but they see, that did not affect them specifically, but you see, Blanchard, because he is a coin metal dealer, does have standing, and that's why this suit may be successful, or at least hopefully people will begin to understand it's all manipulated. And let me just briefly tell you what Alan Greenspan wrote in 1966 in an essay, and this is what he said. In the absence of the gold standard, there's no way to protect savings from confiscation through inflation. There's no safe store of value. If there were, the government would have to make its holding illegal, as was done in the case of gold. The financial policy of the welfare state requires that there be no way for the owners of wealth to protect themselves. This is the shabby secret of the welfare state, as tirades against gold. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the confiscation of wealth. Gold stands in the way of this insidious process. That's what it's all about. They intend to confiscate your wealth. The wealthy get wealthier. The poor get poorer. You want to hang on, Tony? We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I don't want to sound like I'm somebody who is against people making money or becoming wealthy. I think it's a wonderful thing to do. I think that America's offered that opportunity to people throughout the years, and I applaud those who have obtained wealth and used their wealth wisely. What I'm concerned about is those people of fabulous wealth who want to use that wealth to establish a feudal society here in America and destroy this system that has allowed them to gain great wealth and prevent others from duplicating what they've done. And this is really what has happened. We have a very small group of people who have accumulated great wealth, and they, generation after generation, they've used this, and their whole idea is to change our structure of government and create basically a fascist or feudalistic system under their control by centralizing all power in Washington, D.C., and then buying and selling the politicians so they can advance their own programs, rather than supporting our system of limited central government, which has allowed the greatest degree of liberty that's ever existed throughout recorded history. Tony, did you have another question?
Well, I guess for Ron, as far as I check the comics silver levels just like on a daily basis, and the registered silver that's available right now is just a hair over 50 million ounces. In 1998, when Warren Buffett bought in, there was about 400 million ounces that was available. Now, if I were in charge of the COMEX, I mean, there would be bells and whistles and red flags going off all over the place. I was wondering if you had any comment on that.
Oh, absolutely. We're getting down to the bottom of the barrel, and their ability to manipulate the price is going to dry up as soon as the physical shortage of silver starts to manifest. And as you said, we're down to like 50 million ounces, and that's the largest storage of silver anywhere in the world. So if you multiply 50 million ounces times today's price of, let's say, $7, less than $500 million would buy all the known silver that's stored there. So you can see the dilemma they're in. This thing is about to blow the lid off of it, because they've literally created a monster over the last 20, 30 years by suppressing the price of silver. Therefore, you destroy the incentive for the miners to go out and produce silver. You tell the consumers of silver to use all you want, because obviously we have more than we need, because if we didn't, certainly the price would rise. So what we've been doing is just consuming silver and not producing. We just run deficit after deficit. A $50 million inventory won't even cover 1 year's deficit.
So. Hold that thought there right for a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown. Our guest on the line is our good friend Tony. And Tony is questioning what's happening. At one time, we had massive supplies of silver. A few years ago, we had 400 million ounces. Now we have about 50 million ounces on the COMEX, which is the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, in my understanding. And of course, they use 50 million ounces. We use a lot more than that, but that's about to go behind every single year. And very, very soon, there's not going to be enough silver to meet demand. Would that be a fair statement, Ron?
Absolutely. You know, they're running out of rabbits. You know, the story's been the last two or three years that China was dumping enough silver into the market to take up the slack. But see, they can't do that forever. China is buying every commodity in the world. Copper supplies are doing the same thing because China's like a gigantic Pac-Man just consuming the raw materials around the globe. So we certainly can't depend on China to continue dumping silver if they ever were. And so once they run out of places to go to get some silver to take up the slack on the short term, then all of a sudden the shortage will start to manifest, and that's when the manipulators will lose control in all these massive short positions on the futures market. Last time I looked, it was over 300 million ounces that the manipulators have sold silver contracts to which they have no silver to deliver.
And that old adage of he who sells what isn't his and has to give it back or go to prison. And basically, they're trying to. If people went in and actually took delivery on silver, there wouldn't be any silver for them to get. So I think, Tony, the day of reckoning is coming for the people who've been manipulating the price of gold and silver on the world market in an effort to not only to control the value of those commodities, but also to maintain their control over the paper money system, because the fraudulent money system that they've created is beginning, of course, to fall apart at the seams as other countries begin to challenge the supremacy of the United States as the source of wealth based entirely upon paper money, which is no longer redeemable. Anything else, Tony?
Well, Dr. Stan, there's a fellow who has a website, goldismoney.com. His name is Jason Hommel, I believe. I might not have said that right. But he makes a fairly good argument using the Bible that he believes that we will return to a gold standard, or the world will at some time. Now, I don't really necessarily know if I buy it or not, but I was just wondering if either you or Ron had a comment on that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much, Tony.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Ron, what are your thoughts? Do you think we're going to return to a gold standard?
Not really. I think the whole system is on the verge of collapsing. Now, you're going to see, you were saying earlier, the euro claims to have a 15% backing for their gold, and the dinar supposedly has a 15% or whatever. But, you know, that's not really a gold standard. If you really want a gold standard, you would have to say, here's the paper money, and it is a claim on a specific amount of gold, and any time you choose, you could redeem, like our old $20 gold pieces, for the gold. Well, no one's really doing that anymore. The insiders that are running the show and looking for their global governments are going to create and collapse the system, which would require us to go back to a gold standard if we wanted to bring sanity back into the economy. But if the people who are running the show want a one-world government, I think the last thing on their mind would be to go back to a gold standard.
And I think you're absolutely right. Now, of course, we don't know what's going to happen, but the real objective of the people working behind the scenes is a new world monetary system, a new world economic system, a new world order, and a new world religion. That's what it's really all about. That's their objective. That's their goal. And they would like to take us into a cashless society where everything is mediated by the government. And not only simply by our government, every government in the world would be joined together and controlling then their populace. That's what their real objective, their real goal is, and that at that point you'll neither buy nor sell, lest you wear the mark of the beast or known by the number of his name. So this is where we're headed. Will they be able to pull it off? I don't know, because I believe there are powerful spiritual forces behind what's going on, and I believe at some point we're going to see God's intervention in this. I don't know when it's going to come, and it may not come until after the new world leader has been appointed, and I believe that is going to be Satan himself, or at least his disciple, because there is a holy untrinity. Just as there is a trinity, the sacred trinity of Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, there is an unholy trinity of Satan, the Antichrist, and the false prophet, who will be the religious leader of the world. And I can see this all beginning to fall together, because I don't think you can understand anything going on from a geopolitical point of view unless you look at it also from a spiritual point of view. And that is tragically is what so few people are doing today. They're either looking at it politically or they're looking at it spiritually, and they're not looking at it, the overview of it. What are your thoughts on that, Ron?
I agree with that totally. You know, if anyone that studies the scriptures, it's going right to plan. The Satan or the beast will give him the power to control the saints for a time and time and a half time. And we're getting there, and you can see the control coming over. You know, this whole terrorist thing is bringing in the government facilities to control everything. You know, Homeland Security, if it's not done properly by the people in the wrong hands, it's more like a Gestapo.
Well, I think it's not in the hands of the right people. They are collecting dossiers on all law-abiding citizens in America, and there's not one thing in the Patriot Act mentioning Islamic terrorism. In fact, they've redefined terrorism. A terrorist is anybody who doesn't want to go along with their program, who wants to change our form of government. Well, that means that George Bush and John Kerry are both terrorists because they want to change our form of government. We have a constitutional republic, and the Constitution is still the law of the land, no matter, even if all of our judges and all of our elected officials are violating their oath of office regularly. When they expand the power of the federal government, maybe they've never read the 10th Amendment. Maybe they've never read Article 1, Section 8, and realize that the powers of the federal government are limited and very definitely prescribed. In fact, that's laid out in the 45th of the Federalist Papers. Maybe they ought to read the Federalist Papers. Maybe we ought to have a required course for every congressman on a weekly basis, so we would understand the significance of the oath he's taken. And, you know, if he is not abiding by his oath, then he should be impeached and removed from office. But that's up to the people out here. We have to understand really what was going on, and we have to hold our congressmen their feet to the fire. And they may be the best Republican or the best Democrat we know, and they may agree with us on a lot of issues, things we feel very strongly about, but if they're violating their oath to uphold the Constitution, you should vote to get rid of them. In fact, we ought to vote to get rid of about, I'd say about 95% of our congressmen today, and we'd be a lot better off. Well, Ron, what should people be doing now to protect themselves? Because we've laid out a scenario that we are, I believe, and I think you would agree, that we're in very, very perilous times. They are keeping things together by manipulating the stock market, by manipulating the gold and silver market, by manipulating the oil market, and if you doubt that it's being manipulated, well, I just get Woodward's book and see what he writes about what the Saudis told him. And, of course, could you expect that the Bush administration would say, oh, yeah, sure, we got this secret agreement with the Saudis. But that's what the Saudis told Woodward. He puts in his book, and I don't believe everything Woodward writes, but certainly I think that we see right now, against all odds, I mean, they blow up all the pipelines in the southern part of Iraq, and the price of oil falls. What's wrong with this scenario? Well, I think you have to realize it's all manipulated. So pick up the story from there, Ron.
Well, you know, the first thing, all we have to really do is step back and forget the politics and just look at the facts and figures. If you took a look at the debt structure and charted it, you can see that it is starting to literally go parabolic. It's almost going straight up. You know, it took over 200 years, before we got to our first $1 trillion worth of national debt. And I don't know how many years it took to get to 2 trillion, maybe 8 or 10 years. But now we're looking, I think we've done over $1 trillion in just the last year and a half. So if you just look at the debt structure, then obviously the system is going ballistic, and it will implode on itself, because once it starts going parabolic, the party's over.
And I think you're absolutely right. We started this country as a country in 1789. And from 1789 until 1980, that's 200 years, why we had a debt of $1 trillion. Ronald Reagan increased the national debt on average $200 billion a year, or during the time he was in the White House, between $1.7 and $1.8 trillion. So the time that Ronald Reagan left the White House in January of 1989, why we had a debt of between $2.7 and $2.8 trillion. Now we're over $7 trillion. By October, it should be about $7.38 trillion. And that's just the national debt. Then we have all the other debts, the Social Security commitment we have, that's about $44 trillion. And, of course, you tack onto that the federal pensions and the veterans' pensions and the congressmen's pensions, and then this new drug bill that they just passed. And you're talking about almost $50 trillion. There isn't that much money in the world. There's no way that they can pay that off. They know that. They just don't want the American people to know that. They want to retire and, of course, let the House of Cards tumble after they get out, but believe me, they'll want to keep their pensions and their health care, which is a lot better than the pensions and health care that the people who've been paying them are going to get from their Social Security and Medicare. So, but Ron, what can people do at this time to protect themselves, and how can they get in touch with you, you know, because you've been studying this for a long time, and I know you've got some important things that I think people ought to read.
Well, if they'd like to get a couple reports I've put out, just call me at 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561. And I'll be glad to send them to you immediately.
All right, fine. And, of course, what are they going to get if they get those reports?
Well, I've written several reports on what's going on with the economy and silver in specific. I really believe silver is the greatest investment opportunity of our lifetime. In fact, I think it's the primary way people can protect themselves from this paper monetary system that is obviously about to implode. You know, just to continue where we were talking about going parabolic, if you go back and look at the textbooks or any market, whether it's the dot-com bubble or the tulip bubble or any of those that we've talked about, once they get to that point, it's just a matter of time before they collapse and the whole system disintegrates. So the system we're talking about collapsing is the system of paper money. So everything that people have invested in, their traditional investments, are all denominated in paper dollars. And if they don't wake up to the fact that that is what's collapsing, then no matter how successful they've been in the stock market or the real estate market or whatever, they will end up losing it all when that system implodes on itself. And it's just a question of time.
No, right,
so I believe gold and silver. You know, we were talking about the shortage coming up, and let me explain why I think they are right up on the verge of losing total control of the manipulation of the silver price. You know, in the first wave up that went from, we were talking earlier, went from 2001 to 2004, that is the smart money or the people money, the people that are really in the know and understand economics, and they're the ones that participated in that market. That's typically your big money. The big money doesn't want to take delivery of real silver. So they were the ones that were vulnerable to buying silver in contract form, and that's what allowed them to manipulate the market through the derivatives and the futures market. Now we're going into the next wave up, and this is the wave where people suddenly will start to wake up to the fact that we have inflation. And with the oil price going to $50 a barrel, as you explained earlier, everything we do has an energy cost to it. So as people wake up to the fact that there's real inflation, then they're going to have to learn to invest their money differently. People are not going to leave their money invested in CDs or T-bills paying 3 or 4% once they perceive inflation's going at the rate of 8 or 10%. And with the oil price going up the way it is and gasoline prices and everything is starting to go up ballistically, you know, and the cost of living, people are starting to wake up to inflation. And so now in this next wave up is when the small investor will get involved. And he's just trying to buy a little silver to protect himself from the devaluation of the currency. But see, I call him the Lilliputian. We don't buy much each, but there's a lot of us. And as those people come in to buy silver, they're not going to buy a futures contract. what they're going to do is buy a bag of silver or some one-ounce silver rounds. And as those people come in to buy silver, that's 50 million ounces or 100 million ounces, or even if there was a billion ounces of silver out there, would dry up in a matter of weeks. So I think that's, as we go into this next phase, silver is going to literally break the bonds that have held it back for all these years. And once it breaks past a certain point, and I don't know whether that's $10 or $15 an ounce, but at that point, everyone will see that silver is the place to be, and you get just a small percentage of that trillions of dollars trying to get into silver, and there's only a few billion out there. You can see what's going to happen to the price.
Well, now, what's happening over in India? Do we have any idea? In the past, the Indians were large purchasers of silver, and certainly as the Indian economy really is beginning to boom, the people are having more disposable money. Are they buying much in the way of silver, or do we really know what's happening in India?
The last I heard, they were buying more. As the dollar goes, gets weaker and weaker and weaker, then the people are leaning to, you know, we've heard about China buying lots of gold and silver. They're opening it up to their citizens. So while the Silver Users Association in America would love to get into that silver that India has, I suspect there's going to be tremendous resistance. There has been up to now.
Because the Indians like to actually have that. The Indians traditionally have always wanted to have physical possession of silver because this was a storehouse of wealth for them, wasn't it?
That's right. And, you know, when you say they want to get to that silver, well, that silver is not really owned by the government. That silver is owned by millions and millions of Indian people, and they're not going to give it up because it's, you know, it's something sacred to them.
Of course, we're talking about hundreds of millions. In fact, very soon, India's population will exceed that of communist China's population. And, of course, they've got 1.3 billion people in China, but India is rapidly approaching and actually going to increase because they don't have this forced one-child policy that they have in China. So India is going to continue exploding. Sharp, intelligent, very capable people. They're getting our jobs. I got a call from some fellow who was, of course, checking for my Pitney Bowes machine today. And he was obviously Indian. He was probably over in Calcutta or in Delhi or someplace like that. Of course, sending our jobs over there to get them, of course, because it's much cheaper to hire them there. And, of course, with that comes the progressive lowering of the living standards in here. It's all part of the plan laid out in the Earth Charter for redistribution of wealth within nations and between nations. If you haven't read the Earth Charter, we'll tell you how to get one. Ron, give that number just one more time.
That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, God bless you. And thank you so much for being with us. And hopefully people will begin moving to protect themselves, because I think we're in for some very difficult times ahead. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm a minor historian, but I'll tell you, I'm very concerned. Good night. God bless you, Ron.
Be with you, Dr. Stanley.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we've put together a newsletter, and it certainly is available to any of you out there in the listening audience. If you'd like a free copy of this, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. But we talk here about, of course, what Warren Buffett has written, and Warren Buffett is certainly one of the smartest people in the world. And Warren Buffett, of course, is a personal friend of Lord Rothschild. In fact, he was the one who took Arnold Schwarzenegger over to check with Lord Rothschild before Arnold was allowed to run for the governorship. And as you know, they're grooming Arnold to become the president. Now, whether he'll ever become the president or not, they're obviously grooming many people, people like Giuliani, all being created for the public by the people who control the media. But Warren Buffett, I believe, really does know what's happening. And this is basically what he said. And I'm quoting from his letter to the stockholder, to the shareholders of Berkshire Hathaway in 2003. Over the past two decades, I was excessively fearful of inflation. More to the point at hand, I started way back in 1987 to publicly worry about our mounting trade deficits. Berkshire Hathaway has made significant investments in several foreign currencies. To hold other currencies is to believe that the dollar will decline. Both as an American and as an investor, I actually hope that these commitments prove to be mistaken. Any profits Berkshire may make from currency trading would pale against the losses the company and our shareholders would incur from a plunging dollar. Well, he then goes on to talk about derivatives, and he says, and this is from his annual report of 2003, in our view, derivatives are financial weapons of mass destruction, carrying dangers that, while now latent, are potentially lethal. And then, of course, what you should know is that he is actually Berkshire Hathaway. As of June of this year, they have to announce what they're investing in. They've invested $19 billion in foreign currency contracts. Now, these are contracts aimed at betting the dollar is going to fall. These are leverage contracts. These are derivatives. These are the financial weapons of mass destruction that he's talking about. They have a potential for tremendous profits if he's right, but there's a time limit. And they've invested $19 billion, according to articles we have. Berkshire Hathaway is putting the money there because they think the dollar is going to fall. And with that, of course, will fall the expectations of people who put their confidence in money exclusively rather than the Lord. And I think we have to realize this is a spiritual battle. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will decide right now that you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And certainly you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And when you join the Radio Liberty family, well, you get our four best tapes of the month, you get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you help us as we reach out across America. Actually, 5 hours every day by radio, and 5 hours every day by internet, and 4 hours every day by shortwave, and 4 hours every day by satellite, soon to be 5 hours. We've just opened now, starting a program in Detroit, Michigan. It's actually heard there fairly late at night. That's the next hour, but at least we're giving the people in Detroit a chance to hear information they're never going to hear elsewhere. So we hope that you will want to join us in this epic crusade to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. Our job is to educate the American people. Can America be saved? I don't know. But I think we have to try. I think that we're called upon to try, not to sit around and just say, woe is me. I think that God could intervene if the American people were worthy of his intervention. The thing is that if we do not do the right thing in this country, why, God will never again bless this country. And so it's important that people understand the dark and sinister spirits of forces, the secret societies that are at work within our nation, the significance of the occult emblem on the back of the dollar bill, which really bothered me terribly. One of the major Christian ministries put out a commentary on the emblem on the back of the dollar bill. Well, I've got the writings of the Masons. I've got the writings of the occultists and the Satanists. They tell us exactly what those things mean. The pyramid cap by the all-seeing eye, the slogan beneath that Nova Ordo Seclorum, the 13 steps on the pyramid, the significance of the number 13 emblazoned so many places on the back of the dollar bill, because 13 is an occult emblem. But you see, there are people who have infiltrated the Christian ministries to neutralize the Christians who should be taking a stand, and I'm sure the same is true with the Jewish organizations as well, to neutralize everybody so they will not understand the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. If you really want to know more about the spiritual battle, you need, of course, to get our newsletter, and we'd be glad to send you a free copy of our latest newsletter. That's the August newsletter. We've read a little excerpt of it from this evening, of what Warren Buffett says, what Alan Greenspan says. We'll be glad to send you free of charge a copy of our newsletter by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You can go to our webpage at radioliberty.com and pull down copies of our newsletter. They're all there. We encourage you to copy them and give them to others, and encourage others to listen to our programs and get educated. And sometimes we repeat programs, ideas over, but repetition is the way people can learn about what's really going on today. I want to mention we're having an all-day seminar here in the Monterey Bay area on the 7th of pardon me, on the 6th of November. We're bringing in outside speakers. It's going to be the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. If you'd like to know how to get there or like to make reservations, we can give you the list of the hotels. And, of course, we're going to serve lunch. It's going to be an all-day session. It's going to be a great time. You'll have a chance to meet people from all across the country. Hopefully this time again from all across the world, people who know what's going on and, of course, are want to make contact with other people who know what's going on. So if you're interested in coming to our all-day seminar on the 6th of November, our telephone number 1-800-544-8927, because we have to have advance reservations. And then, of course, we encourage you to go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And, of course, please tell other people. You can listen to our program there on the Internet. Links from there, 5 hours a day. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our colleagues. And, of course, we encourage you to give us a call. Actually, it looks like we may not have our regularly scheduled guest this evening. So give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out there across America, we'd love to hear from you, because unfortunately our regular guest doesn't appear to to be here. So in the meantime, let's talk about something that I was thinking about earlier today. I don't know how many of you remember our discussion of the energy crisis here in California. Now, the energy crisis in California simply is mirrored all across the country, so this is not simply a local issue, but the impact of the energy crisis in California certainly is heard, will be felt all across the country, because California is the basically the sixth largest economy in the entire world. I mean, you've got the United States, and then you got Japan, and then you got Germany, you got China, and then I think you have maybe Great Britain, and then you have California. We are the sixth largest economy in the entire world. And so what happens in California is certainly going to have an impact upon what happens throughout the rest of the world. Well, some years ago, the environmental movement got very active here in California, and they managed to block efforts to build nuclear power plants, and they caused the cost of a nuclear power plant to increase tenfold and delay it for 20 years, as they did with the Diablo Canyon power plant. They did everything they could to block building of new power plants and to really raise the cost of our electricity that we use here. So California actually had a slightly higher level of cost for electricity than other states. And so a group of people came in and said, look, what we need to do is bring competition into the electricity business. And so what we would suggest is we deregulate electricity. And, of course, what we do is bring competition in the market, because competition causes the prices to go down. And who could be against competition? And, of course, this was pushed by the PG&E in Northern California and Southern California Edison and throughout the southern part, and then the electricity company down in San Diego. So all the major electricity producers were behind deregulation. And somebody should have asked why. And, of course, Pete Wilson, the liberal Republican administration, was behind this. And the trouble was, every place this had been tried, it had always failed. It had always driven the price of electricity up. And it was very obvious what was going to happen if we deregulate electricity. And yet they sold this to the people here in California. They sold it to the leaders of both the Republican and Democrat Party, and it was unanimous. We were going to deregulate electricity. Well, there's no way to deregulate a monopoly. And, of course, all this idea of bringing in competition was simply a scam. PG&E made $4 billion by being able to sell off its power plants, and then, of course, they were going to bring in other companies, private companies, that were going to begin to produce electricity. What actually happened, of course, is that other companies were allowed to come in, and now they were allowed to build their power plants. But, of course, the price of electricity started to rise, and then there were artificial shortages that were created. The Public Utilities Commission wouldn't allow the utilities to buy futures contracts to secure the price, and suddenly electricity that was costing, you know, maybe $100 per megawatt went up to $1,000. And the exact figures now, I can't remember exactly, but a phenomenal increase, sometimes 100, sometimes 10, sometimes 100 times the price we'd been paying before. And we had a massive electricity crisis. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were simply talking about what had happened as far as the electricity crisis was concerned. Well, here, of course, we had Enron and Dynergy and so many of the companies coming in and making fabulous profits. And then, of course, Governor Davis went ahead and they signed contracts that was going to cost the ratepayers here in the state of California $20 billion additional for electricity. And of course, this was one of the things I think that eventually got Governor Davis recalled. But as you begin to look at this and you say, well, who is really behind this? And some people said, well, it was PG&E because they made a lot of money. And some people said, well, it was Governor Davis because he must have been on the take. He was getting financed by the public utilities. And other people said, oh, well, it really had to be the Public Utilities Commission, because they were the ones who blocked the efforts to buy futures contracts. PG&E wanted to buy futures contracts. They wouldn't let them. And then, of course, other people said, no, it was the Federal Electricity Regulating Commission. It was the Federal Commission, because they wouldn't intervene and stop the exploitation. People said, no, it was the Enron and the Dynergy and the other big electric companies that were coming in here. And, of course, what they did is they created so much confusion, nobody could see that they were all in cahoots in this thing together. This didn't happen by accident. They knew exactly what they were doing. And with that as a background, I wanted, of course, to, if you've never seen my video on the electricity crisis or read our newsletters on the electricity crisis, you really need to get them, because it's a prototype of what happened on 9/11. Well, we've suddenly got two people on the line. We've got Eric from Compton, and we've got live from Southern California, Carol Matriciano. So let's go to Carol, and I'm going to apologize to Eric for not being able to talk to him, but he can call in if he'd like to a little bit later. But right now, let's go to Carol Matriciano. And Carol really has a fascinating background. Carol was born in India at the closing days of the colonial system, where England, of course, was the dominant force in there, and of course she lived under the British colonial rule. She had an opportunity to see India with all of its mysteries, with all of its occultism, because India, of course, is a country that's dedicated to the occult. Their Hindu religion is based upon occultism and mysticism. And Carol, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Did we lose Carol? It looks like we lost Carol. Well, we'll hope we'll have her back in just a moment. But Carol Matrician, of course, was brought up in the occult and brought up with these mystical beliefs, and she saw, there she is. Hi, Carol. We'll be with you in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Okay, Dr. Stan, and our guest is Carol Matriciano, who is a video film producer. She carries a number of films. She's made a number of films. We carry Supernatural Powers, The Battle Between Good and Evil, Harry Potter, the New Barbarians, recent ones, The Gods of Entertainment, and I'm sure there are a couple I'm not even thinking of right now, but these are the ones that, of course, come to mind right now. She's gone in the background of Halloween and Christmas, but right now let's just talk about the things that we're most acquainted with, and we're talking about Carol, we are basically talking about her upbringing in India, because certainly this is colored her whole outlook on things, having started out believing in many of these occult ideas, and then, of course, coming to know the Lord. But she is aware of this occult force, which is such a dominant force in American society today. And she's out there with a clarion call trying to awaken people to what's going on. And most people in America don't even believe that there really are supernatural powers, that there is another dimension, that we live in one dimension, but there is another dimension. There is a supernatural dimension where there are angels and where there are demons, and these demons pass over into our world, and of course they will energize people. They will channel ideas through people like Helena Petrovna Blavatsky and Annie Besant and of course Alice Bailey and people like Barbara Marx Hubbard, one of the most powerful women in America today, ran for vice president on the Democratic ticket against Geraldine Ferraro back in 1984, and has written some information talking about the necessity of killing a quarter of the world's population, people who won't evolve to a higher level of consciousness. But her book, The Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation, was channeled to her by a spirit. And people better understand that there are spirits, there is a spirit world, and you can't understand anything happening politically unless you understand the other dimension. Carol, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Well, Dr. Stan, thank you so much for your gracious patience. And I hope we've got over all the little hiccups, but thank you so much for having me as your guest. I just love hearing your amazing knowledge. You have to be one of the most incredibly well-versed and well-read radio hosts of the century.
Well, I doubt that, but I've just been very, very fortunate. I've had the opportunity to read your work and learn so much from it. Well, Carol, why don't you tell our listeners what it was like growing up in India, and of course your experience with the supernatural and the things that you did see that really almost defy logical explanations?
Well, I had such a wonderfully fortunate childhood. I was raised for the first 20 years of my life almost in India. I was born there as the last British registered baby in British India, and grew up with the Victorian legacy and British colonialism, and surrounded by people of many different faiths, of course the predominant being Hinduism, which the president of India said is much more a creed, is much more a culture than a creed. It's a very complex religion rooted in nature worship and the idea of Mother Earth being India, and sort of the adulation of seasons, and it's been said that there are 9 million gods there, and I must say I probably met all of them while I was there, but there are just hundreds of shrines and temples and altars, and one is surrounded by people who truly, truly understand the existence of the supernatural. and they are continually appeasing the gods of nature, the gods of that are walking the streets. For instance, the holy cow is venerated as a god, and she walks the streets, and you know, it's believed that one dies and comes back again in reincarnation, much like the cycles of nature that you that are dying and rebirthing and dying and rebirthing. So that being surrounded by Hindus in this enormous diverse and variety of beliefs that is tied up not only in the idea of Hinduism, but its social structure, which is based on the matriarchal, the idea that the mother rules, and that the matriarchal society, of course, sees the woman in government and all this kind of thing, which is very interesting because the feminine, the female and feminine spirituality is looked at as an important spiritual aspect. And then, of course, its long history rooted in Aryanism. And then, you know, India is replete with Muslims, Jains, Parsis, Sikhs, all sorts of other religions, and several denominations of Christianity as well. So one, I had a wonderful upbringing of being able to mix with the elite and also the very lowly, and be able to speak several languages in India as I went to school there, and learned how to really communicate in a respectful way with people of different religions. And I was amazed when I got back in about sort of 20, when I was just about 20 years old, back to the West, to see that a whole new type of Eastern mysticism had been repackaged for the Western mindset, and the advent of the Beatles, and of course there was that wonderful show on in London at the time called Hair, which advocated yoga and drugs and Eastern mysticism, and the Beatles sang about it. The Maharishi Mahesh Yogi took Hollywood celebrities out to India to introduce them to transcendental meditation, and it only took a few years for the religion to be completely repackaged and absorbed into the West, where now we've got household words like yoga and guru and meditation. These are all words that sort of came into our vocabulary, but all rooted in a real deep spirituality. But for instance, just the word yoga, you know, within Hinduism is known to be a discipline that the elderly Hindu gets involved in to train him or her to be prepared for reincarnation, to die and come back again in another life. And yet yoga here in the West has been repackaged as a exercise for giving health to the living, whereas in India it's teaching the living how to die and prepare for reincarnation.
But don't you think that there is an element within yoga and in this meditation of opening yourself to demonic spirits?
Oh, well, absolutely, because even within Hinduism, they will say that a master of a tremendous well of knowledge must teach the disciplines of yoga, and the practitioner looks within himself, where he is taught to recognize the divine spark within and rekindle the kundalini power, as it's called. The serpent that they believe is coiled at the base of your spine is then, through self-hypnosis, risen up through the backbone, through the chakras, through the sort of invisible spine or sort of trail in the middle of one's body, to be able to come up to the third eye and give the individual enlightenment to show that they've become released to be able to go into their reincarnation cycle. So the idea of just opening oneself up to be able to look within, find the serpent within, and of course we know from the biblical concept that arousing anything to do with the snake is lethal. Eve did it in the garden, and it led to the downfall of mankind. So the idea of communicating or connecting with one's serpent power is indeed a dangerous concept.
Well, I certainly agree with that, and I think it's so interesting that this whole idea of the serpent power. And, of course, to the Christian, they understand that the serpent represents evil. And yet, of course, to them, this kundalini power is so important that they want to be able to harness this serpent power. And, you know, it's all visualized. It sounds very foolish to us, but it's not to them. You look on the back of the dollar bill, you see an all-seeing eye in the center of a triangle. And, of course, that is a cult symbol. And, of course, you see the people, the women, the Hindu women, with a little dot in the middle of their forehead. That is this third eye that gives them this supernatural power. And, of course, they are looking for the supernatural. Everything is aligned with the supernatural. And this is what the American people don't understand. These people come from an entirely different culture, and there's an intense hatred of Christianity there. Fortunately, there are some Christian missionaries, and they are having some sort of an impact, but certainly you've got literally hundreds of millions of people have embraced this truly occultic religion, which I believe is centered in the dark side. Would that be a fair or unfair statement?
Yes, and I think America is becoming more and more aware of the supernatural powers and that there is a spiritual dimension and a supernatural dimension, but of course there is so many people are deeply deceived and believe that any power is good power or can be a white force, and this can be tapped into for good healing, for good energy. And of course, if one were to line this up with the Bible, then one would see that no, indeed, the angel of light himself was only one side of his character, and the other side of his character was Satan, the devil, the dark one, the dragon. So here is a character that is able to be both the angel of light to deceive many and the dragon of darkness.
And of course the Christian belief is that they're entirely different entities. Now, but of course within the occult, they believe there's a good, bad side to evil. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest, Carol Matriciana. We'll welcome your calls. We're going to talk about some of the videos she's produced and talking about this supernatural, the supernatural powers that, of course, are really this true battle between good and evil. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana, and we're talking about, of course, this real, very real battle. People don't understand that this is not something that's being fought over in India. It's being fought right here in the United States for the souls of the American people, for the souls of our children. And what is being taught in schools, much of this, is very, very similar. They're being taught earth worship. They're being taught environmentalism. They're being taught that they will determine what is right and wrong. But everything is done in our schools to take God and prayer out, to take morality out. I was reading an article recently talking about the military analysis of what happened at Abu Ghraib prison, and they said, why, there seems to be a moral breakdown in our society. And I said, well, whoop-de-doo. I mean, isn't that wonderful? You found there's a moral breakdown in our society. What would you expect when you take mention of God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools, and then you see a moral breakdown in society? America was a great nation because we were a Christian nation at one time. But you see, Christianity is under attack. There is a conspiracy against Christianity and against Judaism. And, of course, this is being coordinated by people at the highest echelons of our government and within the Supreme Court itself. This is, the Supreme Court opens every session with that choir comes in and says, God save the United States and this honorable court. And yet they say, oh, we can't mention God or prayer in the schools. What do you mean? You start your sessions every day with it. But you see, they've targeted the minds of our youth, because you control the minds of the youth. You control the nation, you control the next generation, you control the future, and the average Christian has no idea what's going on. Would you agree with that or not?
It is amazing, and you know, when you kind of generalize it like this and show the overall pattern, it does seem so overwhelming, and people probably think it's extreme and too conspiratorial, but you know, if one doesn't get the overview and the bigger picture of the invisible war, that there is an enemy of God out to blind the minds of people and destroy their souls, then one can't understand all the smaller details that all contribute to the larger brainwashing. And you're absolutely right. We've got this attack going on in politics, in the judicial system, in the schools, in the churches. I mean, we see a tremendous growth of the earth-centered religions and the rise of feminine spirituality, even in churches across America. We see the Bible being made gender-friendly, where God is being called, God the Father is being called the Mother, where hymns are having their words changed to placate those that want a gender-friendly God that isn't a father and isn't a patriarch. We've got this society that was founded on the very basic patriarchal system, and God the Father as a father and a ruler is now being changed to embrace Mother, the nurturing female entity, the one that doesn't judge, the one that kind of cuddles and holds and is tolerant towards all religions as equal. And the dangers of this is that we're not equipping the younger generation to be able to fight in the spiritual battle. The sword is being dulled, the word, which is their only unique weapon in the spiritual warfare, is being negated by this gender-friendly translations of the Bible that are coming out almost annually. And
hold that thought right for a moment. We'll bring our other stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Carol Matriciana, who is a video film producer. And if you haven't seen her videos, why, you've missed a real treat, because these are wonderful, wonderful videos that will help you to not only to educate yourself, but to educate others about what's really going on in the world today. If you don't understand that our children's minds are under attack in school, if you don't understand there is a conspiracy against God in this country, if you don't understand that this conspiracy, this occult conspiracy, has infiltrated the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church, and all of these Bible translations, they say, well, you know, we have to understand that King James is so hard to read, and, the next translation, well, this is a little easier, right up to where we now have these new translations, gender neutral, he, she, referring to God, or maybe just she referring to God. Every time you take just away a little bit, you change, you leave a few verses out, you leave the most important verses out, they know exactly what they're doing. And if you go into the message that's being put out through the so-called church growth movement today, where they're using the message, a new translation of the Bible, the terms in that are all out of the occult. They're right out of the New Age, and we'll be doing some programs on that. And the average individual has no idea. But little by little, they're changing the message of the Christian Church. They know exactly what they're doing. Unfortunately, most of our ministers are not trained to recognize this. Certainly the parishioners are not. And that's why we do what we do here on a regular basis, trying to get people to understand what's really happening. And Carol's videos are really a wonderful means of understanding of the witchcraft that exists right here in America, the most rapidly growing religion in America today. It's not the Jehovah's Witnesses, it's not the Mormons, it's not the Moonies, it's witchcraft. Why don't you pick it up from there, Carol?
Well, it's the fastest growing religion amongst teens, Dr. Stan, and the teens, of course, are introduced to it in one incredible way that children all over the world, and particularly here in America, were introduced to it, has been through the Harry Potter books that have been read aloud in the classroom, recommended reading. At one point they were required reading, but that was overturned. And here, of course, a time when the Bible has been expelled, so to speak, from the classroom because it's a religious book, and yet the Harry Potter books come in as fantasy literature, and thank goodness our children are reading, is the cry from parents. So it doesn't matter what they're reading, but as long as they are reading. And these books teach about the faith of witchcraft. And if people say nonsense, there's no such thing as witchcraft, then why has the Supreme Court given witchcraft a bona fide religious status? The IRS have given it tax exemption. There are hundreds of thousands of witches that pursue the belief of female deity, of nature worship, of feminine powers, being able to tap into energies that are able to be used for good and healing. And we've got Wicca chaplains in the military today. So these very basic rites and rituals and trainings of these people are now being made reader-friendly, child-friendly to young children. And these books are coming through the schooling system, read aloud in the classroom by the teachers. And because Scholastic Inc., who are the publishers, are also the curriculum providers and have been the curriculum providers in schools for the last 80 years, they are associated, come under the umbrella of AOL and Time Warner, which is one of the five largest mass media media conglomerates in America that control 95% of all mass media. But Time Warner and Scholastic Inc. and AOL are closely associated, so we see that Harry Potter is then brought to the classroom through AOL's computer systems, and the kids can then go into actual Wiccan covens and ask witches about their religion. And then, of course, Time Warner throws the films up on the silver screen to completely indoctrinate hundreds of thousands of children into child-friendly witchcraft.
In fact, I have an email from a witch who was furious because I had been on a nationwide program talking about witchcraft, and she said, "Why, we're just nice people, you know, there's some bad witches, but we're really good witches. We just want, of course, to, we have our ceremonies so we can contact beings from another dimension. So we can contact beings from another dimension, and that's what it's all about. You tap in to these beings, of course, you can gain access to tremendous supernatural power, and that's what it's all about. It's all about tapping into that mysterious power that will give you great wealth and great riches in this lifetime, but of course an eternity of damnation." Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana. And if you are out there in the listening audience and you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But if you have a question or comment, you'd like to talk to Carol, this is an ideal time to do it. The whole idea that there is this supernatural dimension out there is so foreign to the average individual, why they find it difficult to believe. I think even most Christians find it difficult to believe, don't you think, Carol?
Which is absolutely extraordinary, because the very basis of the Christian faith is the knowledge of the existence of Satan, the enemy of God, who beguiled and bewitched Eve to disobey God. So for people not to understand that there is an invisible war going on is just ridiculous, because they're just not Bible-reading people. We know that from the very beginning. In fact, that's why I made the film Supernatural Powers, The Battle Between Good and Evil, to explain the history of angels. Where do they come from? Were they are they male? Are they female? Did they have babies? When were they created? And who are the ministers of God? And how were there fallen angels? And we learned that Lucifer rebelled against God and took a third of the angels with him, and since then have been attacking God's creation, human beings who have been made in the image and likeness of God. So this battle rages. And in the film Supernatural Powers, The Battle Between Good and Evil, I interviewed young children whose lives had been very innocently they were introduced into the occult mainly, interestingly enough, by teachers in their schools. Just suggested reading a horror book or getting a book from the library on the occult, or which just began them their interest in astrology or palm reading or what seemed to be innocuous things like an innocent game of Dungeons and Dragons or the Ouija board. These were the things that started some of these kids into their journey into the occult and changed, which transpired and changed into horrible, horrible stories of horror and bloodshed. And one particular boy in the supernatural powers had a terrible experience where he pulled out a knife on his siblings and mother.
Hold that thought there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana. And if you have not seen the videos she's put together, Supernatural Powers, The Battle Between Good and Evil, The Gods of Entertainment, Harry Potter, Witchcraft, and really so many others that we actually carry a significant number of them. And before we go on, let's go ahead and get your website up there so people will know how they can reach you. So. And how they can get the list of the other things that we don't carry.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. They can actually go into www.caryl.tv.com. My name is not spelt the usual way, but it's CARYL TV, short for television, .com. And that's how they can see all the product and... there's the 800 number there that they can order, and they can write to me. I'd love to hear questions and answer and help people out, so I welcome them to write to me.
In fact, Carol's written the books on this subject. Was that your book, The Gods of the New Age?
Yes, that was my first bestseller, which was kind of showing how the change of Hinduism from India, how it had sort of changed and adapted and itself to Western thought and Western society, and how the New Age, in essence, is coming into the churches, into politics, into the feminist agenda, into schools, and what is Hinduism and what is the New Age? It was a book I thoroughly enjoyed writing, and it's still quite a classic. After that, I wrote one on the evolution conspiracy, which, again, that's an interesting subject on the fact that evolution is said to be not a science, it's introduced into the schools as a science, and really it forms the basis of the religion of Hinduism. And yet creationism, which forms the very basis of biblical faith and Christianity, is not allowed in the schools because it's a religion. And yet evolution comes in calling itself a science, but is merely a theory of faith, and gets into the schools where creationism got thrown out.
Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. That's 464-8295 if you're out there and you'd like to talk to Carol, because I don't think there's anybody who has a better grasp of the occult forces that are working in our society than she does, and the fact that there are two dimensions. There's the dimension that we live in, and then there is the supernatural dimension, where the demonic forces and the angels are involved in the perpetual battle for the souls of men. And unfortunately, we're losing that battle, or they're recruiting our children into the New Age religion. They're turning against God. They're being indoctrinated in environmentalism, which is basically paganism and Mother Earth worship. And the average parent who sends their child to government school has no idea what they're really being taught, or, of course, why their attitudes change. They think it's normal that they go into rebellion. It's not normal at all. This is what they're being taught in school, because their whole attitude towards God and family and country is being altered, and they're not being taught, they're being indoctrinated in a different philosophy. There is no free lunch, ladies and gentlemen. You're paying for the destruction of your child's soul if you leave them there in that environment. We've got Jerry calling from Los Angeles. Hi, Jerry. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Carol, I've come across have you ever heard of like the origins of Genesis, the genes of Isis? What is your take on that from a Christian perspective?
You're talking about Isis?
Yeah, but I've read in more than one place that Genesis supposedly means the genes of Isis.
All right, fine. Have you ever heard anything of that sort?
No, but I'm not amazed at that at all. That would be a very interesting twist on Genesis, which actually means the beginning. And, of course, Isis is a goddess, and a very important goddess in ancient mythology.
Yeah.
So I can see that the pagans who would love to say that their religion existed way before Christianity, and of course in a sense that's true because paganism has been around since the very beginning of almost the beginning of creation, not quite the beginning of creation, but certainly when man...
It's the second oldest religion in the world.
Yes, it is, and Christianity has come after it, but the pagans love to call the old religion more important because it came before Christianity, but they are paganizing a lot of biblical concepts, and I'm not surprised at all, Jerry, that Genesis is turned around.
I don't know if that's true. I've just seen it in a couple of occult websites.
Well, it's an occult website. Jerry, you shouldn't be going to those occult websites because they really will begin to influence your outlook on the world.
Yes, we're
involved in a battle of ideas, and you open yourself up to that if you don't have the Holy Spirit protecting you, why, you're going to begin to believe some of the lies they tell you. Believe me, they're after your very soul.
I don't think so.
You don't think that they want to take you to hell for?
But I have a foundation and a pretty unshakable belief in Christianity and Jesus Christ. No, because, you know, the foundation, of the Bible, I mean, the Christian Bible is rooted in the Catholic Church. And I'm going to have to call Father Gregory Claro, the spokesman for the Archdiocese here in Los Angeles. What is his take on that?
All right, fine. Anything else you want to say, Jerry?
No.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Chris, I would be a little concerned about anything that came out of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles because Cardinal Mahoney is there, and Cardinal Mahoney is certainly, he has embraced everything bad. He was covering for the pedophile, satanic priests, and the other perversions going on down there, but maybe the man that Jerry's going to call will given the right direction. But unfortunately, dark forces have infiltrated many of the dioceses there, the Catholic Church, and of course, but the same dark forces have infiltrated the Protestant Church. There really is a conspiracy against God. And until people understand that, they can't understand anything going on politically or spiritually in America today.
Well, I was raised in the Roman Catholic Church, and I think that while there were many things that I admire it for, some of the disciplines that I have brought into my Christian life, I think the tragedy is that they don't emphasize the reading, the importance of the Bible, the importance of daily reading scriptures, and really being able to go to the Holy Spirit oneself, for the Holy Spirit to be able to lead us and guide us. Dear Jerry here is going to go to some leader in the Catholic Church for an opinion, and that's basically what it's going to be, man's opinion. Whereas if he goes to the Bible itself and studies Genesis and studies the meaning of the word and then understands that the female pagan gods like Isis, etc., were continually an abomination to God, who asked them to be removed again and again from his people's temples and places of worship. But you see, I think this is a problem, that people don't go to the Word of God and to God himself and to the Holy Spirit himself to be able to learn from the Creator, from the Author, from the Divine One, the Wisdom itself. We go to mere men and vain philosophies to get our interpretations and opinions, and that's a tragedy.
Well, let's go to Barbara, who's calling from SoCal. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, good evening. Good to have Carol on. I was, Carol, going back to your time when you were in India, I was wondering what influence, if any, at that time you were there, or if he still has, was a guru by the name of Sai Baba.
Well, Sai Baba is has an enormous influence in India. He is one of the older traditional, I don't mean old in age, but certainly in for a span of time. He has been around for a great deal of time and is well revered by many, many, many millions of people. I think he's probably in his 70s, if I haven't got that wrong, but he is a magic maker. Somebody that has been able to influence his people through signs and wonders and incredible magic, which certain people think is really illusionary, whereas others suppose it to be divine in the sense of having dark powers to be able to do the things he does. There's been quite a bit of controversy about him, particularly with Western followers who got close to him and found out of his sexual perversions, his homosexuality, his voyeurship, and all these kind of things with God men in Hinduism really aren't to be seen as a horror. Of course, we think that God men should have some kind of morality, because we look at divinity in a different way in the West, that there's certain moral attributes. But in India, which is a very confusing a religion of contradictions, really for men to be able to be both homosexual, bisexual, involved in sex, not have any involvement in sex is all part of being enlightened and being God-men, so it can get very confusing. But there are controversies about Sai Baba, and many adore him, revere him, and he is seen as an enlightened person. But, you know, he's just a mere human that is a sinner like anybody else, and who probably needs the knowledge and the revelation of Jesus Christ to save him, because I think he is leading millions and millions into a life of destruction and deception.
So he still weaves a sphere of influence over there even today.
Yes, he does. He is a very, very powerful God man.
We actually carry a book written by one of his former disciples, Talbrook, and it's called Talbrook. It's called Avatar of Night. It's a fascinating story.
Yes.
Really, it gives you tremendous insight into his truly mystical powers. And as I've talked to Tal about this, he is convinced that he really was able to, do things from a supernatural point of view initially. When he first became his follower, he thought that this man truly was a god.
Yes, Tal actually is a friend of mine, and Tal and I have had some quite long discussions over this, and I reminded him, and I don't know if he remembers this, but I think when one is a devotee or a disciple of these people, one is under a spirit of delusion and deception, and so what they do can appear to be mystical and divine. But there are many that have proved that Sai Baba really is involved in nothing short of trickery and is able to it's just a sleight of hand. But and I know how Tao truly sees it in another way. And yes, that's a fascinating book, and it's well worth reading.
It's called The Avatar of Night. Anything else, Barbara?
Nope. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for your call, Barbara.
You're welcome.
And I think that it's important people to understand that there is a whole different world out there. And here you have a nation, over a billion people, predominantly a Hindu nation, and coming into one of the, really coming of its age, within probably 20 years, India will be one of the four major manufacturing centers of the world. That will be China, India, Brazil, and Russia. This is what they're planning as they transfer America's wealth out of this country. Our leaders know exactly what they're doing. They're moving us, America, from an industrial nation to a post-industrial nation to a third world nation, so that they will be able to bring the people under control, because people who are impoverished and hungry and just struggling to make a living are not going to be concerned about these archaic ideas of freedom. And I really think that this is exactly what's happening. And if you doubt that they plan to redistribute our wealth or the redistribution of wealth between nations, and you've not yet read the Earth Charter, you can pull it down off the Internet, or if you can't get it there, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Ask for a copy of the Earth Charter. Look for Point 10. And, of course, this book is written by that great humanitarian, Mikhail Gorbachev, Maurice Strong, a multi-billionaire who runs the United Nations, and Stephen Rockefeller. Understand the strong occultic overtones, because these men of great wealth and great power, tied into the United Nations, the former dictator of Russia, of course, Mikhail Gorbachev, they have a spiritual agenda, and that is to bring about the new world economic system, the world monetary system, the new world order, and the new world religion, because that's the very essence of it. Well, we've got about 2 minutes. What are your thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight, Carol?
Oh, Dr. Stan, we have been all around the world with thoughts and philosophies here. Let me see. I think I would like to leave your listeners with the idea of buyer beware. Be sure to discern and understand what you are being lulled into, lured into. Check it out. Test the spirits. Measure everything against the Bible. Be like the Bereans in Acts 17 that checked everything out against the scriptures. This is a time where we really need to be spiritually discerning in these days.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I think that certainly our minds, our reality, are under attack today. And the fact that they've been able to sweep so many good Christians into this new religion that's called the Church Growth Movement, and of course, first comes the Alpha Course, and then the Beta Course, and the leaders of this will tell you our goal is to change the world. And how are we going to change it? Are we going to get them back to fundamental Christianity? No, we have a new form of Christianity. It's laid out in one of the Bible translations most frequently quoted by Rick Warren. It's called The Message. And if you read that,
it comes
right out of Robert Schuller, who is a New Age minister in the Crystal Cathedral. But, of course, they're not going to tell you what it's really all about. But it's really about a new world order, a new world religion, a new world monetary system, and, of course, the transformation of society. Carol, thank you so much. We're going to just keep you for 3 more minutes here. We do have, be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and right now we've got Jerry back on the line. Jerry, did you have something else you wanted to say?
I thought I just threw out that was like a bomb, and I really do have a Christian perspective, but like I said, I come from a sort of Christian Gnostic sort. I know it's like heresy, but...
You're a Christian Gnostic?
Let's not get sidetracked. I believe, you know, this world is the God of this world is the devil. And we have to remember God had no beginning and has no end. So when we read in the first passage of Genesis, it says the Elohim, the gods, created the heaven and the earth.
Did you have a question for Carol? Everything you've said, I agree with totally. Did you have a question for Carol?
No. I just wanted to say, you know, because I thought, you know, when I said, you know, the genes of ISIS, you know, I'm not an occultic person as you might think, but, you know, I mean, that's my take on it, and I just felt like I threw out that bomb of, you know, the genes of ISIS without really...
Okay.
I mean,
God bless you. We're going to have to go because we got Terry in Santa Cruz. Terry, we're just about out of time. Do you have a quick question? Okay, I guess we lost Terry. Well, I'm sorry, Terry. I don't know what happened, but I hope I didn't press the wrong button. Carol, we're just about out of time. Did you have something you wanted to say about what Jerry was saying?
No, not really. I appreciate Jerry calling back again to explain his position, and it was good to know your position, Jerry.
Okay, fine. Well, we're just about out of time. And, of course, you really would want to, of course, get hold of the Spirits of Warfare, the Struggle Between Good and Evil, a very important video. I specifically like the Gods of Entertainment, the latest one, which goes into the background of certainly what's going on in Hollywood today. Lots of clips from The Passion and Mel Gibson and his interview with Diane Sawyer. And then, of course, the Hollywood producer, a director who talks about the purpose of Hollywood, not to make money, to destroy Christianity. When you understand that, everything begins to make sense. Carol, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stan. It's always a pleasure being with you. Thank you.
Well, we'll let you go, and good night. God bless. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, that's it. Carol, and Carol Matriciana is certainly one of my favorite guests, and I hope that she's one of yours as well, because we can learn so much from her wisdom. She's been at this. She's lived on both sides of that spiritual divide. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent on those of you who listen to our program to help us as we reach out 5 hours every day by radio somewhere in America, by Internet, by shortwave, by satellite, 4 hours a day on shortwave and 4 hours a day on satellite. You can help us by telling others about our shortwave programs, and if you need to get the frequencies, why, you can go to our website at radioliberty.com, or you can call us at 1-800-544-8927, and we'll get back to you and give you those shortwave frequencies. Your job is to get other people listening to understand the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged today. You can help by encouraging people to go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can encourage people by and help them by making copies of our newsletters. Now, if you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, which goes into the background of what's happening financially, what Warren Buffett really thinks, what Alan Greenspan really thinks, not what they tell you, not what Alan Greenspan tells Congress, but what he really thinks and believes, why, it's very well covered in our August newsletter, and we'd be glad to send you a free copy of that newsletter if you just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Ask for a copy of the August newsletter, and then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get some of the things we produced. Certainly a book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, gives you a tremendous insight into the true nature of the spiritual battle. The videos we're carrying, either the 4-hour or the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, goes into the origin of the rock and roll music that has captivated the generations of the 50s and 60s and 70s, and yes, it's still there today. It's the rock and roll music that's coming into our churches, but you must understand its origin. What energizes this? You need to see this video. It's the most amazing video. It's called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 4-hour version or the 10-hour version. And if you'd like to get them, of course, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We have other videos. Of course, Carol videos are excellent. The Gods of Entertainment, her video on witchcraft, her video on Harry Potter, her video on The New Barbarians, a video on Halloween. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Go up on our website and you can see the list of all of the various items we carry, or certainly you get, if you order anything, or even if you simply order a free newsletter, why, we'll send you a copy of the catalog and you can look up all of Carol's videos. But a very important part of the Armamentarium, so you can actually understand yourself and then help to educate others about the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. Let me mention, we are going to be having an all-day seminar here in the Monterey Bay area on the 6th of November, and it's going to be held at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. Lunch is going to be served, great time. We're going to have a lot of people coming, hopefully from across the country, and as in the past, hopefully from across the world. So we hope that you'll want to be here as well, but you have to call ahead of time. We're going to serve lunch. We have to know if any people are going to be there, and as I say, we are bringing in speakers from outside. So I hope you'll come, that you'll bring your friends, and of course you'll have an opportunity to meet a lot of great people and hear a lot of great information, and well, we look forward to seeing you. Hope you can make it. Remember our number, it's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. America, our values, our future, our freedom, we're under attack today. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, we will be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.